And now, my friends on Talksport and on Talk, let's talk about an unsung hero, a football player, a good football player, some say a great football player, but a man who's also, to an extent, an architect of the success of others. He was a facilitator. He was a creative individual who sometimes sacrificed his own wishes to help other people. And he's a fantastic, fantastic testament to the power of football. And above all, the kind of fact that people are willing to sacrifice sometimes their own ambition to stay at it, even if they've seen time and from time to time those aspirations and hopes of their own ending disappointment. I'm talking about a lovely fella. I must admit, I didn't know a huge amount about him until I finished a brilliant book that John Saintsy, because he's the subject of the book, had written with Neil Vasher. It's called Last Man Standing, From Saint to Saints and Beyond. And I'm delighted to say that Neil Vasher joins us now because, tragically, and it is a tragedy, this, I think, Neil, John Saintsy is no longer with us. He died a couple of years ago, I think, didn't he? Good morning, Neil.
Hello, Paul. Yes, that's right, I'm afraid. It was quite sudden. John passed away in 2023 before we were able to quite bring the book to a conclusion. Fortunately, John had written many notes throughout the whole of his career with a view to getting a book like this together at some stage, but it hadn't sort of developed. And then suddenly we bumped into each other, and he was a boyhood favourite of mine as a Bournemouth supporter, and we got chatting, and the result of that was that we were able to sort of move things a step forward, almost to completion. But it's just such a shame that he is not here to see it now.
Because he kept notes, hadn't he, pretty much, throughout his playing life, and then his life, behind the scenes in football, being very important in football. He kept a lot of notes, didn't he?
He did, very much so. He wrote his thoughts down at the time, both in terms of how he felt the game should be played and how his career was progressing. And it was from those notes, with the help of his wife, Lindsay, who then typed them out for me, because these were all handwritten, literally. They were lovely to look at, but Lindsay then put them in some sort of order, and then we were able to put the book together. That was John all over. He was a great thinker. He's very much somebody who operated under the radar, if you like, and his desire to reach the top as a player was almost thwarted at times by a bit of bad luck and other people stepping in at the wrong time for him. But rather than dwell on that, he moved on to the next stage. And it was in the coaching department that he really did make his presence felt.
So the book's called John Saintsy, Last Man Standing, From Saint to Saints and Beyond, published by Pitch, out now, folks. Let's talk a bit first, though, very briefly about his playing career, because I think he received his football education at Spurs, and he then, I think, went to Bournemouth, and they dispensed with his services just before an end-of-season party, which was rather brutal.
Well, yeah, he was an apprentice at Tottenham. He scored a lot of goals for Tottenham as a centre-forward, signed professional forms for them in July 63, but he had a lot of opposition to try and force his way into the side with the likes of Alan Gilzean and Jimmy Greaves there, and he wasn't actually ever able to do so. So he moved to Reading in August 67 to make his Football League debut.
And he gets a bit of a hammering, doesn't he, the first time he runs out for Reading?
Oh, he did. I think he got his first taste of third division defenders, and it sort of resonated with him so much so that he could remember that right through his career, the mauling he got that day. But he scored two goals anyway. Mm. And Freddie Cox, who was manager of Bournemouth, was a long-time admirer of John's, wanted to bring him down to Dean Court. And eventually, he got him down in February 1970. At a point when Bournemouth were struggling in the third division, sadly got relegated. Freddie Cox left, John Bond took over. And that's a key factor in John Saintsy's future, as it turned out.
But before that happens, of course, Bournemouth let him go, as I said, at kind of very bad timing. And then I think he then moves into the coaching arena. I know I'm glossing over stuff here. And the John Bond character name is fascinating. He's an amazing player and an amazing figure in football, often, I think, underrated. And he got into trouble for a while, didn't he, John Bond? Because he said, look, we're not producing good players in this country. And he blamed school teachers.
That's right, yes. And John was basically, I think, spending a lot of time in Norwich and East Anglia going round to the schools and sort of saying, well, that's not quite how John meant it. And he was sort of redeveloping a relationship that was falling apart. Mm. And I think it was to John's credit that he was able to do this. And, he was able to get the schools, the county FAs back on side. And I think that was down to his personality and the way he treated people.
And, of course, it's Bondy who gives John Saintsy his first coaching role, effectively, isn't it, at Norwich?
That's right. Well, he'd encouraged John to get involved in coaching the youth team at Bournemouth when John was out of the side. He couldn't get into the side, unfortunately, because we had a couple of strikers called Ted McDougall and Phil Boyer who were keeping him out. And so John encouraged him into coaching the youngsters. And then eventually he joined John when he'd moved to Norwich as their youth team coach to start with. And then eventually he worked his way up to the first team coach, where he was coaching Ted McDougall, Phil Boyer, and people like Martin Peters, really experienced professionals. And it developed from there. He then followed John to Manchester City, where, again, he was dealing with world-class players.
Well, I should say, to go back slightly about the book itself, there's an amazing number of testaments, tributes to Mr. Sainty, the Saint, as they used to call him, from all kinds of different players. I mean, some big names you mentioned there, of course. There are plenty of other names in the book. How did you go about getting those, Neil? Did you write to people directly, or did John already approach people about this?
Well, this is largely down to John's wife, Lindsay. And she got in touch with all these people that were basically still in touch with John on social media, etc. And when they heard about the book and how far we got and how we'd like to finish it, we thought it would be nice if the people who had worked with John would like to add their perspectives of what John meant to them and how he'd affected their careers. And to be honest, the response we got was brilliant from all across the board, from former managers, players, youth players. There was one common denominator, and that was that they all seemed to speak so highly of him in whatever role he played in their career, which was lovely. People from Dennis Stewart, who wrote the foreword, yeah, right down to some of the youth team at Bournemouth, who sadly never did have a professional career, but still had fond memories and good stories to tell of life with John.
And, of course, the other John, John Bond, goes to Man City, and he gets him to Wembley, and kind of along with him is Sainty.
Yes, he's in the background there. You can see him on the bench there at Wembley if you look closely on the film. But typical John, I think he did appear on the pitch just before the half, the extra time was played. But that's about all you would have seen of him. But John was this foil, if you like, to John Bond's more possibly gruff exterior. John was the one who put his arm around the players and sort of try and coach them and gently get them, you know, to see what's required from them. And they just worked well together.
And then, I mean, you know, things change in football, fortunes change, people go up, you know, careers go up and down, they get results, you don't get results. Tell us how important he was at Southampton, though, because for reading the book, and again, this will interest Kane, my producer and co-presenter, is a big Southampton fan, he effectively laid the foundations for Southampton's youth academy, football academy, which has been an inspiration to other clubs. Other clubs have stolen that idea, I think, down the decades.
That's right. Well, he moved originally to Southampton from Stockport, where he'd had some success as assistant manager to Danny Bergara and then Dave Jones, who obviously moved to Southampton with him. And John originally came as assistant manager, but he soon switched to the role of academy director, which is something I know he took great pleasure from. And he literally reinvented the youth system down there. He set up a lodge for players to stay out safely, looked after a lot of things to do with their welfare, introduced new ideas. And the sort of players who came through that academy at different stages were the likes of Gareth Bale, Theo Walcott, Adam Lallana,
yeah,
Andrew Sermon. And this was John's baby, if you like. He set all this up, and that sowed the seed now that has gone on to produce quite a lot of players for Southampton that they've been able to introduce to the first team and then sell on, of course.
And some big names and big characters mentioned in the book. Harry Redknapp, Matt Letizia, of course. But yes. John Sainty, you know, the Saint, as they call him, he was somebody who seemed to kind of be very much grounded, kept his feet on the ground, I suppose, because he was dealing with younger players and the problems and issues they face. I mean, he'd seen players fall by the wayside. He knew not everybody could make it in football. And yet he seemed to be able to give people a kind of a positivity about the game at every level.
Yes, he could. He was able to take a positive even when the situation looked negative, right down from when he wasn't able to get into our first team down at Bournemouth. He started doing the coaching. And then when Ted McDougall, Phil Boyer had gone, and he came back into the first team and was our leading goal scorer in 73-74, which was why it was such a surprise he was released at the end of the season. But there were difficult times at Bournemouth then. But so that was typical John. And, you know, the same going forward, I think at Stockport, he had the chance to take over from Danny Bergara as manager. But he felt, no, Dave was better for that role. He would prefer to just be in the background, and he was the organiser. He organised everything.
So he recommended Dave for that job, didn't he? I think he then says, but then actually stepped aside himself on that front. And now they say that all political careers end in failure. I think Enoch Powell said that first, actually, writing about a bloke called Edward Carrington, who was a foreign secretary of the First World War. And you could argue that pretty much all football careers kind of end in failure because your services are no longer required when, you know, your way of playing starts to lose, when you're, you know, you don't get the speed on your legs still. That wasn't the case, though, I think, with John Saintsy. I think it's just that, you know, new people come in and they maybe want their own faces around them.
I think that's right. I think that John certainly did underrate his own abilities at times. I think he was capable of far more. And I think it was a case of just thinking, well, there's somebody better, so let them do it. And you stand aside. And that's something that sort of follows through in a number of instances during his career.
He's also somebody that seems slightly economical with words. He doesn't seem very kind of, you know, he wasn't one of those guys who would motivate or give you huge lengthy instructions. He was somebody, I think, he could tweak somebody's performance or give them a few words of advice, and that could make a difference.
Yeah, he was the sort of guy that would sit in the corner and listen to everybody shouting the odds or whatever, and then he'd say something and everybody would turn around and look. And because John had said it, they would immediately take that point he was making, because John didn't just say anything for the sake of it. He only made himself known when he felt there was something that needed saying. So you could rely on him. You know, if it was required, he'd be there. But he wasn't one to go around shouting and screaming. He preferred the rather methodical approach.
And there's a lovely bit, a chapter near the end of the book, when the book is it's either written John's first person, it's his own, obviously with your help in shaping it, and then testaments from other people, tributes from other people. But there's a lovely bit near the end when he talks about, he came from Poplar, which for those who don't know is near where I grew up, in Stratford over in East London. And he talks about being, you know, sometimes he can't quite believe that this sport that he loves has taken him from Poplar pretty much all over the world. Because he was at that time, wasn't he? I mean, from the late 60s onwards, when football suddenly became, or gradually became, from being, you know, this country, it went to Europe, and it suddenly became global. And he was around for that change in football, I think.
Yes, very much so. And he was always open to take on advice from coaches all over the country, all over the world, and enjoyed very much travelling abroad. He went over to China and did some coaching over there. And he was always open to new things. And I think that's what kept John sort of going for so long as he did, really.
Well, in fact, he's in China. There's a great bit where he just talks about, he's wandering through by somewhere in Beijing or wherever, and he suddenly sees a crowd over there, I think. Yes. Justin Fashanu and Peter Mendham had gone missing, and he had to go out and try and find them, didn't he? Tell him what he finds in this square in China.
Well, yeah, he suddenly saw this crowd of people, and he thought, oh, I wonder what's going on here. And as he walked over there, he could see Justin and Peter Mendham kicking a football to each other, and the Chinese were absolutely taken aback by this, and you know, you couldn't believe it. John rather thought, well, he didn't know what he was going to find when he went out to try and search for them, but you know, that was just one of the great things that he was able to recollect and share with us.
And there's a wonderful bit of the book when, you know, football, I'm not making light of trouble of the terraces, football hooliganism and stuff, but it was a rather different form of hooliganism that got some Chinese football fans arrested. I'm trying to find the bit. Oh, here it is. Okay. It says that a Beijing newspaper reported that about 50 Chinese supporters were arrested during City's matches. Okay, so City over there, for whistling, cursing the referee, setting off fireworks, and releasing flocks of homing pigeons at the match. I mean, the notion of smuggling homing pigeons in and releasing them was some kind of protest, but to get the results home was just bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't think it'll catch on.
No, let's hope not.
Just one of so many funny stories that John had stored away in his locker there, and it was brilliant to hear him recount these and to be able to put them out there, you know, so other fans can enjoy them.
And I should say, and the city was in China with was Norwich City, for those who...
It was Norwich, yes.
Norwich City, of course. And as I said, the book's a lovely read, and it's an unusual book, unusual kind of stylistically, because you've got all the tributes in there. You've got John's own story with a lot of help from your good self. Of course, his wife's got a chapter at the beginning, and there's that wonderful foreword there. Great read from Dennis Stewart. And the book's on pitch, so we urge you to get hold of a copy, folks. It's not because he played at so many places, worked at so many places, that, you know, there's something in this book for everybody. You mentioned you're a Bournemouth fan, a big Bournemouth fan. You must think you've died and gone to football heaven, don't you, Neil, at the moment?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, not only am I a fan, I worked at the club full-time for 21 years until recently taking semi-retirement. And I must admit, I've seen, you know, the complete contrast from literally going out there with the buckets, desperately trying to stay in the Football League, and now we reach the point where the Champions League seems to be on the agenda, and it's absolutely unbelievable.
I mean, it's a kind of footballing story, the ascendancy, that gives us all faith and hope, I think. When we hear about this notion of the corporatisation of football, that there's going to be the big six will always rule the roost, you know, that suddenly you get the Leicester City come along, win the Premier League title, get the FA Cup, and the Bournemouth story, I think, is as remarkable, if not more remarkable, than what happened with Leicester. It's an amazing achievement.
Well, I think it gives hope to every club that are in a similar position, because at the end of the day, a lot of it is down to good fortune. We were fortunate enough to have an owner who was able to invest an adequate sum of money in the club for the league that we were in, and a manager who turned out, well, it came from a rookie to somebody who was very, very good. And we had the two together. You don't often get that. You sometimes get one or the other, but we had them both. And it's from that basis that we were able to grow. But it just gives hopes to all the clubs in the third and fourth division clubs.
Well, even non-EFL clubs that have been in the EFL, they can rise. Look what happened with Luton. I know Luton are now struggling as these things happen sometimes. The pendulum swings the other way. Let me ask you a really dumb question, and I probably know the answer. Are you called the Cherries because of the colour of your kit?
That's something of a...
A mystery. It's a mystery, is it?
It is a bit of a mystery. But the real answer is that, yes, you're right, it is to do with the colour of the shirts. There was a theory also that it was because a cherry orchard used to run alongside the ground.
Oh, I prefer that. But, I like that.
Yes, it sounds a lot more interesting, but no, they were known as the Cherry Stripes originally, when we used to play in red and white striped shirts.
I'm not trying to presume upon any inside info you might have, but Kane Reeves, my top producer, co-presenter, he often teases Bournemouth about the fact that he says you can only get 7 men and a wet dog inside your stadium, which I think is harsh. Are there any plans to increase capacity at Bournemouth? Well, I mean, we know that Everton are moving into their fantastic looking new stadium next season. We can't expect Bournemouth to suddenly, be having massive building projects, and land in your part of the world, or that part of the world, is hugely expensive. But it does, I mean, it's going to be a shocker when you're entertaining Real Madrid or beating Barcelona there in front of, as Kane would say, 7 men and a wet dog.
Yes, there are plans to do something about that, and our new owner Bill Foley is working towards that. What we've done, first of all, is we've built a new training academy. That's 6 miles down the road. Absolutely brilliant facilities there to try and encourage young talent to come to us to develop. The stadium. It's a difficult one. It wasn't built for Premier League football. It was built for League One, League Two football. But there are plans in the pipeline to do something there, to either increase the capacity of the current stadium or move to another site nearby with a new stadium. They've been sort of discussed for a number of years, but...
As one fan to another, I was just very curious on that front. Neil, you've been a fantastic guest, mate. I hope we get to talk again. You've been really interesting on this book on Bournemouth. Neil Vacher's the man named, spelled Vacher. The book, though, is John Sainty, His Story, Last Man Standing, From Saint to Saints and Beyond, published by Pitch. We urge you to get hold of a copy, and you heard the interview with me, Paul Ross, and Neil right here on TalkSport and Talk. We're live, my friends, till 5.